Yes, yes. At any rate, we are learning Nachum. And we know that Nachum speaks about one thing and one thing only, which is the destruction of Nineveh. And he is obsessed with the destruction of Nineveh being, he puts it in two stages, because he barely makes mention of stage one. As I've been teaching it to you, I've been just automatically saying in three stages, automatically, because Nachum does not talk about stage one, which was when the army of Sanherib was destroyed outside of Yerushalayim. He does talk about at the beginning of Perek Bet, which we started, and we did all of 1.5 psukim last time. But, the middle of Gimel. Oh, so we did 2.5 psukim. Yes, because we stopped in the middle. We stopped in the middle of the pasuk. But at any rate, that I remembered, that it was in the middle of the pasuk. But at any rate, so he talks about the fact that Yehuda was saved. He alludes in that pasuk to the fact that Yehuda was saved. But he doesn't really count that as the first defeat of Nineveh. And I think that the reason he doesn't really refer to it as the first defeat is because the army was defeated, but the arrogance of the kings of Nineveh, of Ashur, was not in any way abated. It was not lessened. And that's what we know was the problem with the kings of Ashur, the kings who dwelt in Nineveh. But we really can extrapolate. I really felt when I was preparing this particular parak, I am recording. I really felt that that is more, because I started thinking back to Yonah. And Yonah, remember Nineveh Ha'ir HaGdolah, the emphasis on Nineveh Ha'ir HaGdolah. We'll pick it up, of course, because we're so, I think, more conscious as we're listening on Yom Kippur, that idea of Ha'ir HaGdolah. And so I think that it's bigger. It's talking about the arrogance of princes and the arrogance of kings, the arrogance of mamlachot, kingdoms that feel that they need to dominate, that they need to crush, that they need to expand, that they have this utter cruelty of which Nachum describes Nineveh as being an example. And it's an example of this type of attitude towards themselves and towards the world. And we'll see the entire three prakim of Nachum are totally involved with the destruction of Nineveh. Perek Bet is actually very artistically constructed. We have three psukim at the beginning, three psukim at the end, and then there's a middle. The three psukim at the beginning are, Yehuda, be happy, you're going to be saved, you will not be destroyed by Nineveh. If you remember, one of the reasons that we stopped in the middle of a pasuk was because Marcel was very concerned about the idea that after there being such a great miracle, Yehuda did not immediately do tshuva, return to Hashem. It didn't happen. This great miracle that happened before their eyes, this overt, it was not a hidden miracle, it was overt. The army was killed by a magefa, boom! In the morning, nobody was alive but Sanherib himself. And it didn't make a great impact on the people at all. The first three psukim talk about Yehuda, be happy because you were saved. The middle talks about how Ashur was so sure. Ashur was so sure. Excuse me. That they would continue being the strong, dominant power that they were. And the end compares, the end is very much like Echa. It sort of like is an oi, whoa, look what happened. to that strong kingdom. 3-3 and then a middle. Very, very interesting. We will see also that from time to time, Nahum cannot resist playing with words. It will be very evident in this pasuk, and in fact, the part of the pasuk that we were in the middle of. But let's quickly go from pasuk aleph so that we remember. Hine al haharim raglei mevaser. That always sounds good, because a mevaser is somebody who brings good news. We never use the word mevaser for somebody who's bringing bad news. Mevaser is automatically a bearer of good news. So behold, look, on the hills there are the feet of the bringer of good tidings. Mashmiya shalom, he's making us hear words of peace, saying, Chagi Yehuda Chagayich, Yehuda, celebrate your Chagim. And it means specifically, the Beit HaMikdash was saved from Sancheriv. The Beit HaMikdash wasn't touched, he never got into Yerushalayim. So you can celebrate your Chagim by going to the Beit HaMikdash and doing the proper Karbanot. Celebrate your Chagim, Yehuda. Shalmi nedarayich. You can go to the Beit HaMikdash and repay all of the nedarim, the vows that you made when you were so fearful and you felt that you were in such great trouble. Can you imagine the fear that must have gone through the residents of Yerushalayim as they saw and heard news of that huge army marching towards them, coming down to Yerushalayim? Imagine the fear. And now you made all those nedarim, you could go to the Beit HaMikdash and you can pay everything that you vowed. Ki lo yosif od la'avor bach bli'ya'al. Because the bli'ya'al, the person, the foolish, the evil, foolish person, the person of no use, bli'ya'al, will no longer pass through you, kulo nechrat. He was totally cut off, totally destroyed. Allah mefis al panayich, Natsor Mitsura. The person who scattered, because remember we talked about this, that's what Asher did. He scattered. When he conquered an enemy, he sent them out into exile and scattered them. He didn't let them settle in one place in Galut. He scattered. He mixed populations. Natsor Mitsura, which if I remember, they made themselves a matzor, they made themselves a, they set siege. Okay, got it. They set siege. Tzapei derech, but you know, they were looking ahead happily, and you know what happened when you looked at the road. Chazak matnayim ametz koach ma'od. And that could go both on the army, and it could go on Am Yisrael, right? In other words, they were all ready. They were looking at Yerushalayim. He rose on your face. He set up, he set siege, and he looked forward to going right into Yerushalayim. We all know that the famous Perek in Yeshayahu, Od Hayom B'Nov La'amod, is talking about Sancheriv standing in Nov. You know, Feif Yado Har Tzion, he waves his hand at Har Tzion, he says, I'm going to be there tomorrow. Tomorrow for him didn't come. I'm going to be there. He's waving his hand and he's saying, I'm going to be there. Tzapei derech. He's looking forward to the road. Chazek matnayim. He is strengthening his hips. I'm almost there. Ametz koach ma'od, and gather your strength. Or it could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying to Yehuda, you had no reason to be afraid. Chazek matnayim and ametz koach. Strengthen yourselves. Yes. You're thinking of Babe Ruth?
I'm going to put it
right there. Ah, what a good thought. What a nice thought. Lovely. Ki shav Hashem et Gaon Yaakov ki Gaon Yisrael. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu returned the glory. Gaon here is glory of Yaakov ki Gaon Yisrael. Each one of the Mefarshim has a slightly different take on that. Gaon Yaakov ki Gaon Yisrael could be, I am also going to return the glory of Malchut Yisrael. That would be Yaakov in this case. That's the Malbim. Just like the Gaon of Yisrael, in this case, not being Malchut Yisrael, but being Malchut Yehuda. In other words, they will also be returned, you know, like Rachel and the Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah, who was davening also for Ephraim, not just all her children, not just those from Malchut Yehuda. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, not only am I saving you from the enemy, but I am also going to save Malchut Yisrael eventually. Or it could be that Hashem will return the Gaon of Yaakov, and Yaakov is Am Yisrael. He's only talking about Yehuda, and it's the stage of Yehuda of being like Yaakov, which is a lesser stage, and I'm going to bring them back to the state of being Yisrael, like when HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the name of Yaakov, and it was made to be Yisrael.
Yaakov comes out
as
Yisrael, because it's
with a big nation. Yeah, with a nation. And then we stopped before we got to the play on words here. It's really great. Ki b'kakum b'kakim. It's not the only time he's going to do it. He's going to do it before. Uzmorehem shichetu. You, Am Yisrael, are going to be saved. Your glory will be restored because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has broken them, but kakum is like made them empty. He has emptied. Actually, those who empty made them empty. In other words, an enemy made them empty, right? With kakum bokeim uzmorehem, and not only the bokeim is like the image is of a vine, and a vine has been emptied of its grapes, slicha, that's the bekakum, and zmorehem, the vine also has shoots that come out, and sometimes the shoots can take over, so that if the vine is destroyed, the shoots will continue growing. It's not going to happen with them. They have been cut back. The shoots are going to be destroyed, as well as any produce. So those who destroy have destroyed them, even though it really mean those who empty the grapes, who rid them of the grapes, have rid them, have emptied them.
I don't understand. That would mean that the Syrians destroyed themselves?
No. It means that an enemy destroyed them. It's a strange... The reason that it's hard to understand here is because we're not sure who the enemy is. But it's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this case. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who can surely do more destruction than Asher does, has destroyed them. So that was Asher, the army of Asher, outside of... I know what she's going to ask already. Yes. Image.
Metaphor of a vineyard for them, it's our metaphor. It's a metaphor for Amstrad.
Ay, ay, ay.
Grapes have to be, and our sin takes care of us.
That's.
And that's what it says in
the field and from the place and we get there. So why does he use it for Agamemnon?
Question, I'm sure that not everybody heard. Marcel, I knew she was going to ask it. I saw it on her face immediately. I could feel the cold finger of Marcel's questions coming upon me. Yes, it was Marcel is saying the essence of the imagery of a Geffen, of a Kerem, is Am Yisrael, because, you know, there are special halachot in a Kerem. It has a special Kedusha. We make Kiddush. And what did you say?
The Israelite people is compared to a vine, and the rich clusters of which have been plucked by the creator.
So, that would mean that what he's saying is that... Oh, sorry. I'm going to get the cough drops because we are in need. I think that what does Sansino, did he quote anybody there? One at a time, please. I can only think of one idea at a time. It's small brain. It's this big. I think what Sansino was saying, it's a pretty good answer, that it does refer to Am Yisrael, and that the vine destroyed them. Again?
He says it's that the vine, Israel is the vine, but the rich clusters have been plucked by the green hands of Assyria.
So then it would mean, interesting, does he quote anybody?
No, but
he
doesn't say who he's
Okay, in 1 minute it will really go away. That was what they had done. So I think whoever he's quoting, and he's got to be quoting somebody, is changing the meaning a little bit. Because what he's saying is, Am Yisrael is the vine, and the reason that Asher is being destroyed is because they plucked, so to speak, that was good language. They plucked the grapes. They emptied the vine. And therefore, they are going to be destroyed.
I think it's true that the sandwich usually first Israel, it's usually positive. But there's another side of grapes where the Nazir swears to not even go into a vineyard. So maybe it has another connotation.
It's an interesting idea. We got to turn it over a little bit, because even with the Nazir, it's not that the grapes are bad. It's that the grapes cause him something. The grapes are never bad. The grapes are always a symbol. It's very true. Okay, that was good. See, we work together. We learn something new. I love it. At any rate, part two. We're coming to part two. So basically part one was HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying to Yehuda, you have been saved, be happy, celebrate, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to punish Ashur because of what they did, I'm turning it around this way, to the vine. Pasuk Dalet, describing the arrogance, the preparedness for war of Ashur. Magen Giborehu Ma'adam. The shields of their Giborehu is Giborav, like their strongman. The shields were red, Ma'adam, like Ma'udam, and it means like blood. They were ready to use their shields to murder, to shed, in war, to shed blood. And Sheikhail Mitulaim. Their men of war, their heroes, are metulaim. You know, tolad is a deeper red. Tolad is the worm that makes shani, right? Tolad shani. So they are as though red because this is what they want to do. They want to shed blood. They are warlike. They want to fight. Be'esh pladot harechev biyom hachino. Their chariots are like flames of fire that are also red, like the idea of war and fire and fighting on the day that they prepare for war. Vahabroshim haralu. And broshim are cypress trees, but here it's referring to the spears that were made of cypress wood. Haralu, what they used to do with their spears is dip the end in poison so that it not only penetrated but it also poisoned the person that it hit. So in other words, they're getting ready to fight. They're getting ready to conquer the world. This is talking about the second defeat of Ashur. After what happened with Sennacherib, it is more in the time of Nahum, when the people of Ashur are still out to assert their aggression, their dominance of the world, even though they got that heavy clap with the whole army being destroyed outside of Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, they are still warlike. They're still ready to go out and fight.
Isn't it strange, the idea of a shield, which is protective, and not usually used as a weapon? How does it get red?
From the blood of the people they're fighting with.
It wouldn't be on their shield.
Also, when it spurts out.
I hate to make the it's the idea of the blood being all around them. In other words, the idea of, like, you should think of blood. In other words, it doesn't matter where it is. As they're preparing, make the metaphor bigger. As they're preparing for war to protect themselves, what are they thinking about? Shedding blood. That's the idea of the picture that he's making. Bachutzot Yitholulu. They celebrate. When they go out to war, they're so happy. When they prepare themselves to conquer and destroy and shed blood, they riot, but in a good way, revel in the chutzot, in the streets. It's interesting. Malbim says the chutzot are the areas in the back of the houses. Rechovot is the areas, the street, in front of the houses. And so when it says bachutzot this and barachovot that, it means all over, right? In back of the houses, in front of the houses, all over the city, they're celebrating. Harechev yishtak shikun. It's again a little bit of a play. A little bit of a play with the word. It means still celebrating. It means calling out. It means yelling, making a lot of noise. Yay! They're getting ready to go out to war as the rechev, as the chariots are being prepared. Barachovot. Yeah, Allah Akbar. No, yelling.
That's to scare the people also, the yelling.
But now there's the... Yeah, you're right.
It
but
does scare them.
It's very scary. Mar ehen kalapidim. Their appearance is like torches. Kabarakim yirotzeitu. And they run around like lightning. In other words, they are celebrating. They're getting ready. They're going out to war. They're so happy. And the idea is to conquer, to shed blood, to dominate. Yizkor Adirav, and when the king remembers his strong men, because it would seem that many other nations would always gather around when Ashur went to war, and they were either mercenaries or they were people that just wanted to be part of this great conquering army. So the king remembers that he's going to get even more people to come fight, because they're going to come from the nations around them. But ye kashlu bahalichatam. Ah, now we're going to the downside, right? But they're going to trip up. They won't be able to come join the army. They are going to
stumble.
Good word. They're going to stumble as they come. Ye maharu chomata v'huchan hasochech. They will hurry to the wall, to the chomah. In other words, they're not going to really fight with you. They're going to hurry. They're going to look for protection. Something that protects you, so to speak, from the sun. And this will, they're looking for some protection. They will stumble. They will not fight alongside you. Sha'arei ha'naharot niftachu. The gates of the rivers were opened. V'ha'heichal namog. Heichal is really a sanctuary. It's talking about the palaces here. And their palaces will melt. So now he's telling us exactly what happened to Ashur in the second, part two of their destruction. Remember we mentioned it. It was the idea that the Tigris overflowed. Nineveh sat on the Tigris. And they really relied on it because it was a major, major source of being able to trade. And the Tigris overflowed. And it seems like there had been, their magicians told them, on the day that the Tigris will next overflow, there will be a terrible disaster that happens in Nineveh. And they didn't take it seriously, because the Tigris always overflowed. It happened. You know what happened with Hurricane Florence? Well, you know, there were all kinds of rains, and the Tigris overflowed. And they weren't concerned. They laughed at the magicians. And the magicians kept on predicting. Of course, this is all according to Malbim, who has a fascination with the history of Ashur. They said, the destruction of Nineveh will be foretold when the Tigris will totally overflow and you won't be able to go out on whatever campaign it is that you were planning to start. And that's exactly what happened. The gates of the rivers were opened and the river overflowed into the city and all of the strong men in their palaces melted. All of the desires to go out to war were gone. V'hutzav gulta ho'alota. V'am hoteha minahagot kekol yonim. Mitofafot al livaveihem. Very, very interesting picture. And what the king did is v'hutzav gulta ho'alota. The queen, the one who was always put up as the queen, in other words, the leader, the queen, the adored one, was brought up on a pyre. Remember, we learned that. She was burnt on a pyre. They made a pyre, in other words, to show that the king was unsuccessful. He made this big funeral pyre, which was mainly who was sacrificed on the human, you know, the queen. The Gevira, the ruling queen, was brought up, and all of her maidservants were led up to the pyre with her as they were singing Kekol Yonim. They were singing a dirge as they went up, like the sound of doves. Mitofafot alavavehem. They were really mourning what was happening to them and what happened to the nation. In other words, it was this horrible scene that's being described. It's unclear here whether the king was also burnt on the pyre. The first reference that we had in Perek Aleph, the king also, in other words, the king and the queen, the ruling queen, and all of their maidservants went up on the pyre as a sign of their failure. They failed. And therefore, they failed because the Tigris overflowed, and there they were with all their plans to go to war and do a little bit more conquering, and they were unable to get out of Nineveh because of the Tigris overflowing. No, it's a metaphor. It's the idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu who has set up, remember that he set up the borders on Vayavdel, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated between Hayam VaHayabasha. So there's a whole midrash there about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the water, you go here and no further. Remember, this is it, guys. You got to go right. This is it. So he opened those gates. That's what it's talking about. The gates is metaphoric. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, go ahead, water. And you get the picture of levees. There's no question. But it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing it. Veninve kivrekat mayim mimehi. And Ninve is going to be like a pool of water. In other words, it'll be covered over with the water. Vehema nosim. And they're all running away. They're fleeing from what's happening in Ninve. Imdu amodu ve'ein mefaneh. And people will call out to them and say, it'll go down. The water is going to go down. Stand. You don't have to run away. But there's nobody turning to heed that voice. Did you want to say something, Tammy?
You should learn how to swim.
It was probably very difficult. In other words, as though there's a narrative voice that's saying, you don't have to run away.
I don't know if he can run away.
Run away from the water. Bozu kesef. Bozu zahav. And it seems there is an enemy other than Hashem that has managed to come in while the Tigris is overflowing. And they are coming in to take booty, to take their silver, and to take their gold. Ve'ein keser latchuna. Kavod mikol kli chemda. Interesting. There's no end to their possessions. Come in and take all their possessions. But the most important feeling of the Oyev, they didn't come to get booty. They wanted the glory of defeating Nineveh. Kavod, they wanted honor. Mikol Kli Chemda was desired more than any kind of precious utensil, because the arrogance of Nineveh was what they really wanted to capture the enemy. Look at the next line. Buka umavuka umavulaka. Here he did three. Before that he was doing two. Buka umavuka umavulaka. Buka is emptied. Emptied. Umavulaka and made empty. Buka is empty. Mivulaka, right? Made empty. And the mivulaka is totally destroyed. In other words, Nineveh was emptied, made empty. Nineveh is destroyed. V'lev nameis, and every heart melted. Upik birkayim, and the knees trembled. In other words, they couldn't stand up to what was going on between the river overflowing and the enemy. V'chal chala b'chal matnayim, and in every hip there is, it's trembling, but it's also a little bit of diarrhea. In other words, it's like lack of control in all the hips. Upnei kulam kibtsu parur. And the faces of all of them have gathered like a blackened pot. In other words, they're trembling, they're afraid, they're being destroyed, they're being conquered. It's like there's fear because of what's happening. That was part two. That was part two. Nineveh is getting ready to go out to war. They are very happy. They are celebrating in the streets. They are screaming and yelling and making parties and everything. They look like lapidim, like torches, and they only want to shed blood. And look what happens. The other army that they thought would come join them stumbled and never made it and were just looking for help. And then they themselves were overwhelmed by an enemy and by the fact that the Tigris overflowed, completely destroying Nineveh. However, we know that Nineveh wasn't completely destroyed at that time. They were put down greatly, but once again they did raise their heads. And there was a final defeat way after the time of Nahum, during the end of the time of Yoshiyahu. Remember, while Nahum is giving Nevuah, it's mainly during the time of Menashe. There was Menashe Amon, his son, who ruled for only 2 years, and they were very evil kings. And then Yoshiyahu was the king who was the tzaddik. And at the end of the time of Yoshiyahu, there is a tremendous battle in Carchemish, which is southern Turkey. And remember that Babel defeated Ashur, Nineveh, once and for all. And that was the end, because then Babel was able to build itself into being the major power of the area. At any rate, that's what's happening here. In part 3, there's a little bit of a kina, a dirge. Aye ma'on arayot. Where is the place that was the dwelling place of lions? Where are they? What happened to Nineveh that was strong and bold like a lion? Where is the dwelling place of the lions? Umirehu lakfirim, the place that was like a pasture for young lions. Kfirim are young lions. Asher halach aryeh lavisham. He's using the imagery of different ages of lions to show that they were strong, that they were powerful. Remember, a kfir is like young, right? Not only strong and powerful, but there's the idea of youth. The clear. Yes. Yes. Good. Halach aryeh lavisham. It was so strong, it's as though they walked around like an aryeh lavi, is a female lion. He's using lions of different ages and different sexes. Gur aryeh. Even baby lions. Ve'ein macharid. They were so strong, nothing could make them afraid. Nothing. They just were a place of all these lions. Aryeh toreif bidei gorotav umachanek liliv otav viyamale teref chorav umaonotav trefa. Whew! That was a hard one. Yes. Simply, I'm going to read it to you because I can't remember exactly. So let me read you, because we always go to Malbim and we say help when we can't remember. How could this have happened there? This cruelty. How does it happen that a lion kills its own young? Ratzalomar, what he's saying is, Shahamelech harag et yiladav haktanim. In other words, when the king was making that funeral pyre, that he killed his children. Doesn't even mention his wife. Notice that doesn't matter. Yeah, killed his wife. But how could he kill his children? V'ha'aryeh, no, I was wrong. Mechanek l'liv otav, that's women. That's the female lion. Shetziva l'chanek et nashav. Shehem halaviyot. And he commanded to strangle, because from the fire, they strangled from the fire, the smoke, right? And it was his, the women. Tziva l'chanek et nashav. Shehem halaviyot. Ki nitchanku al yedei ha'ashan. They were strangled by the smoke. V'yemale teref chorav, masha tarafet nafshav, korei trefa, bilshon nekeva. the fact that he killed his wives is called trefad, Latin, female. Umasha tarafet gurav kore taref. In other words, he's just telling us why is a trefan taref. The women is a trefa. In other words, they taref doesn't mean not kosher. Taref means
my first thought.
I know. I was trying to straighten that out. I had a feeling. Taref is torn. We can't eat. We call all things that are not kosher taref. But you know, I have news for you. Taref is something that is not killed properly, not by slaughtering properly. So taref, in other words, let's go back to the pasuk now. In other words, all of the corners of his nation were filled with taref, torn, people being killed. How could it happen that they did that? In other words, there they were, like lions, living in their own land and totally, totally self-possessed. And totally happy and totally comfortable with themselves. How could it happen that the lion turned on its own, on its children, the lion, and on the female lions? Hineni elayich, Ne'um Hashem. Let's finish. Yes?
Sometimes in ancient times they had a Avodah Zarah where they killed their children in order to get something.
Avodat HaMolech.
Is that what this is?
No, that's Avodat HaMolech. What he's saying here is, how could you have done that? How could you have, in the midst of your defeat by the forces of nature, which is the Tigris overflowing, and by the forces of an army, how could you have turned on your own? But what's there? Nashim, Yidei Nashim, Sid Kaniot, Bishlu Yaldeim. But that's a different picture. That's a picture of starvation. But this is not starvation. In Eicha, when it talks about people unfortunately consuming their young, that they didn't kill their young. In other words, when
they were dead.
And what they did is they used them as food, and it's a terrible picture, but it's starvation. It's the horror of what can happen to a person when they're at the end, when they have no other way to go, when they are almost crazed. The idea is crazed, because whenever you, if you look in Eicha Rabbah, then the Medrash on Eicha, it's that idea that they're crazy from starvation, whereas here it's the idea of defeat. The lion is defeated, and so how do we show it? We show it by burning on this funeral pyre our wives. I find it really amazing, our wives and our children and their servants. In other words, it's like it's an inverse kind of arrogance. You know what I'm saying? This is the way we show that we have been defeated. It's like weird. Last pasuk, Hineni elayich Ne'um Hashem Tzvakot. Whenever a Navi says Hineni elayich, it's I'm on your case. Yirmiyahu uses it all the time. Hineni elayich, I'm not finished with you, Nineveh. I'm on your case, Ne'um Hashem Tzvakot. These are the words the Navi's telling us. These are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. V'hiv arti ba'ashan richba. I will cause all the chariots to be burnt by fire. U'kfi rayich tochal cherev. And your young lions will be consumed by the sword. V'hichrati me'eretz tarpech. V'lo yishama od kol malachechei. A little bit of playing with words again. And basically, that tarpech, I believe, is taf. Let's look. Shelo yitaref od goyim rabim. Rega. Shelo titaref od, yes. So it's your trefa. not your taf, the tarpech that we have. In other words, I will destroy from the land all of the ripping destruction that you yourself did, and we will not find here anymore the sound of your kingdoms, of the arrogance is what it's talking about, of your kingdoms. And according to the Malbim, it's like the Navi is saying, there will be a third defeat. Defeat. There will be. I'm on your case, Nineveh. I'm not finished with you yet. It is going to happen. And you will be completely destroyed. So that's the hint to the third time. Melachayche, isn't that melachayich, it says, cherpat Hashem. And basically, milshon, malach. In other words, it's a putting together of melech and malach in one word. I forgot, sorry. So it's like, because notice it has that aleph. So it would be your messengers and your kings. Melacheche, messengers and king. Mitzudat Zion says it's putting the two words together in one. He does that. He puts the words like tarpech. Notice I thought first that it was tapech, but it's supposed to. You're supposed to think first of tapech, but it's also your trefa. So he does play with words. Perek Gimel.
There's a comment here which is a connection with the word, and he talks about, he says, the last wording in the Hebrew has the archaic spelling. The messengers are the Assyrian officials who ruled the conquered lands and exacted tribute. Still remembered must have been the scene when the arrogant Rabshakeh boasted that by the hand of Yehuda would be destroyed by the Assyrian army. That's from Yeshayahu.
Yes, 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 Rishu, and in Malachim as well. Basically what Sansino is quoting there, which is interesting, is that he's saying is, why is it used Malach? Why do we need all of a sudden a messenger? Because one of the things that Ashur did is they, one of the war things that they did, what do you call it? War tactics. One of the tactics of war that Ashur used was to put fear. You were talking about that with the noise. To put fear in the enemy before you ever come. So they would send a messenger, and the messenger would bring, you know, it was like a delegation, and the messenger would speak in a way that would put the fear of Ashur into the hearts of the people. And what he was quoting there is, way back in the time of Chizkiyahu, that was done, and we see it very clearly in the person of Rabshakeh, who was probably originally a Jew. He was probably originally one of Chizkiyahu's advisors, and he went over to the Assyrians. And you know what happens when a person becomes a mumar? They become stronger than the originals. And so Rabshakeh came into Yerushalayim with a delegation, stood outside of the king's palace, and basically said, Chizkiyahu, what do you think you're doing? You think you're going to be able to fight against Sancheiriv? Give in now. Save yourself a lot of trouble. Don't let anybody be killed, because we are coming. So I guess that he's reminding, this is one of the things they did. I am on your case, and I am going to take care of your kings and all those messengers that you use. Thank you. To put fear into the hearts of your enemy, even before you started fighting them. In the last perek, it's a little bit of a dirge. It's a little bit of giving a reason for why Nineveh had to be destroyed. So it's like suddenly we're back to Jonah. We are really back to Jonah, because Jonah was so upset. At the end of Jonah, how could you do this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I knew you weren't going to kill them. That's why Al Kain Kidamti Livroach Tarshisha. That's why I ran away. That's why I started off the whole story by running away. I did not want to be here. I didn't want to do that, to deliver that message. And we learned Jonah and we said, why was Nineveh saved? Remember? What was the whole lesson of Nineveh being saved? HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not hold them responsible for the Avodah Zarah that they did. He held them responsible for the violence. Remember HaChamas? Asher Biyadam, the violence. And it's as though he is Erech Apayim, which means he gives them a chance to slow to anger so that they have a chance to do tshuva. But that's not what they did.
Did Jonah come later than Nahum? I don't remember. Before.
Way before.
Okay.
Way before. Jonah is actually...
I'm not talking about in the Sefer. I'm talking time.
Oh, I know. I'm talking chronologically. Jonah was actually, I'm sorry that I'm losing my voice all of a sudden. Jonah was actually chronologically before Hosea, who was the first Navi here. But remember that he's put after Hosea, Amos, and Yoel because he didn't speak to the Jews. His message wasn't to Yehud, to Am Yisrael. His message was to the another nation. And also Yoel, remember, doesn't really tell us who he's talking to. So first, Anshe Knesset Agdola put Hosea, then Amos, then Yoel, then Jonah. But truly, Jonah was before all of them. Jonah was a little, remember that Jonah was a student of Elisha. He was the child that Eliyahu revived. So Jonah is really way back. He's the child that Eliyahu revived. He was sent to Nineveh. He also spoke during the time of, if you want to look at your chart, what's his name? Yerovam ben Yoash. The king Yerovam ben Yoash. That will put him a little bit more into context. He was still alive when Hosea and Amos actually spoke, but his originally Nevuah, the Nevuah that we read on Yom Kippur, is before that. Okay, you know what? Let's look at the first pasuk, okay, before we go, of Perek Gimel, and remember Perek Gimel is the last Perek of Nachum. Hoi, Ir Damim. Hoi, we know that word. Whoa, city of blood. You know why you had to be destroyed? Because you were a city of blood. Kula kachash. Kachash is denial. And what it really means, according to the Malvim, it's denying the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the big problems, we talked about that, I don't think it was in our last meeting. I think it was the week before, but I'm not sure. Which is that one of the big problems with Sancheriv is that his challenge was not only against nations, but when he came to Am Yisrael, the challenge was against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the kachash here is denial of the existence of God. Right, that there is a major power that created the world and is in control. So Ir Damim, you are a city of bloodshed, and you were filled with denial. You could say lying, deceit. Deceit. Excuse me?
Here it says deceit.
Deceit. but it's really denial of the existence of God. Perek Malaya Lo Yamish Teref. You never left doing Teref. Ripping, destruction. Perek Malaya. Hagamsha Malaya Mibsar Trefa. So Perek is like a place that is filled with killing, with harega. In other words, you know, Nineveh, why you had to be destroyed? I'll tell you why it had to be destroyed. You were a place filled with blood, filled with dead bodies, and of denial, deceit, and total ignorance of the fact that there is a power in the world that rules the world. That of Hashem. That's Nineveh. And he is going to describe how it looked and why it had to be destroyed. It's really an amazing picture, because we need to go back. It's late. We need to go back and think about the Nineveh that Yonah was sent to and the Nineveh that existed for so many years. It really was a major power. It was a major city. It was a rich, powerful, overwhelming kingdom, and they went too far. They just went too far. Gemar Chatima Tova, my friends. May it be a good year. May we hear besorot tovot only. Halavai, halavai, and may there be shalom al Yisrael.